Welcome back, everybody, to another deep dive. This time, we're going to tackle a question that I see pop up all the time. Folks get a little confused between polyamide and nylon.
Yeah.
So we've got a ton of material here, research articles, forum discussions, even some personal anecdotes from some of you. And the big questions seem to be, are these the same, really? Yeah. And when would you choose one over the other? It's kind of like standing in the paint aisle and staring at two cans that look identical, but they have different names. Like, what's the deal? What's the real difference?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head with that analogy.
Gross.
Because really, to get right to the point, polyamide, IS, nylon, they're the same material, but just like those two cans of paint, there can be some subtle differences that matter depending on what you're trying to do.
Okay, so that simplifies things a little bit.
Yeah.
But why all the confusion then? And
yeah.
If we're talking about, fundamentally the same material, what makes both of them so darn durable? I mean, you see these materials everywhere.
The naming can definitely be a bit tricky. But essentially, polyamide is like the family name, and nylon is the famous cousin that everyone knows.
Oh, okay, I see.
As for their durability, well, think about it this way. A polymer is just a long chain of molecules all linked together. And in polyamide and nylon, these chains are connected by something called MSI bonds, which can link up to other chains, forming hydrogen bonds.
Okay.
You can almost picture it like tiny chains interlocking, creating a super strong structure.
So it's like microscopic chainmail armor that protects the material from damage.
Exactly. And that tightly bound structure is what gives polyamide and nylon their toughness. They can take tons of wear and tear, resist impacts, and they can even shrug off a lot of chemicals.
Okay, I'm starting to get the picture now. So this chainmail effect is what makes them so good for things like, say, the gears in a car engine.
Exactly. Those gears need to withstand constant friction and high temperatures without breaking down. And polyamide is definitely up to the task.
Speaking of high temperatures, you mentioned that polyamide can handle heat. How hot are we talking? I'm picturing like car engines, maybe even spacecraft.
Well, maybe not spacecraft just yet.
Okay.
But you're on the right track. Standard types of polyamide can withstand up to 200 degrees Celsius.
Yeah.
To put that in perspective, that's almost twice the boiling point of water.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah.
But then we also see polyamide in things like ski bindings, which have to function in, freezing temperatures. That's a pretty wild range of conditions.
It really is. I actually work on a project designing ski bindings a while back. We chose polyamide specifically because it stays flexible even in sub-zero temperatures. I mean, you wouldn't want your bindings snapping in the middle of a black diamond run.
Yeah, I can imagine that wouldn't be good.
No.
So it can take the heat of an engine and the chill of a ski slope. Polyamide sounds like a superhero material, but even superheroes have their weaknesses. What are some things that polyamide struggles with?
You're right. No material is invincible. While polyamide is pretty resistant to a lot of things, strong acids and oxidizing agents can be a problem.
That makes sense. Acids are pretty nasty stuff. Do you have like a real-world example of how this weakness can play out?
Yeah, actually. Yeah. Back when I was starting out as a designer, I was working on a project that involved creating a small gear for a high-performance motor. It's a critical component, needed to be super durable.
Sounds like a tough challenge. What material were you thinking of using?
Well, I initially considered polyamide, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because of its strength and ability to handle high temperatures. But I knew this gear would be exposed to oil and other fluids, some of which could be acidic.
So polyamide was out of the running.
Yeah. It was a tough decision, but ultimately, yes. Mm-hmm. I had to go back to the drawing board and find a different material that could handle those specific chemical exposures. It's a great example of why understanding the limitations of a material is just as important as knowing its strengths.
That's a really good point. It's like in those choose your own adventure books, one little decision early on can make a huge difference in the outcome.
Exactly.
So we know that certain chemicals can be a problem for polyamide. What about things like weather? How does it hold up against the elements, especially UV exposure? That seems like a pretty big deal for anything used outdoors.
You're absolutely right. UV resistance is an essential factor to consider, especially for anything that's going to be exposed to sunlight for a long time. While polyamide has a decent level of UV resistance in general, prolonged exposure can cause it to, yellow and become brittle. Like if you leave a plastic toy out in the sun too long, it eventually fades and starts to crack.
So not great for things like outdoor furniture or those colorful playground slides.
Not ideal, no.
No. Oh.
But before you write off polyamide for all outdoor applications, there is a solution.
Okay, I'm all ears. Tell me more.
Additives. specifically UV inhibitors.
Okay.
They could significantly improve polyamide's resistance to UV damage.
So it's like giving polyamide a little extra sunscreen to protect it from those harmful rays.
That's a great way to put it. These UV inhibitors, they act as tiny shields within the material, absorbing that harmful UV radiation and preventing it from breaking down the polymer chains.
Oh, that's fascinating. It really highlights how important it is to consider the entire life cycle of a product, not just its initial strength or appearance.
Right. I remember working on a project where we were designing outdoor furniture, and we knew it had to withstand years of sun exposure. So we ended up using a polyamide that was specifically formulated for outdoor use with a high concentration of UV inhibitors.
So you basically supercharged the polyamide with sun protection. What were the results like? Did it hold up?
It did. The furniture we designed is still out there, looking good and performing well even after years of being exposed to the elements.
That's a fantastic example of how understanding the nuances of a material can lead to real-world success. Now, we've talked about polyamide's impressive strength and how it handles extreme temperatures, as well as its vulnerabilities to chemicals and UV radiation. It's clear that there's a lot to consider when choosing a material, even if it seems straightforward at first.
Absolutely. And that brings us to the question that's likely on our listeners' mind. Okay, this is all great information, but how do I actually make a decision for my project?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question. After all, this is the deep dive, and our listeners are looking for actionable advice.
Right, and there's no one-size-fits-all answer.
Mm-hmm.
But what I can offer is a framework for thinking about it. It all comes down to understanding the specific needs of your project and then matching those needs to the unique properties of different polyamides.
A framework? Sounds intriguing. So how does one go about building this framework?
Think of it as a set of guiding questions first. What is this product going to be used for? Will it be a high wear part like a gear or something more decorative like a piece of furniture?
Okay, so we start with the big picture, the what of the project.
Exactly. Once you've got that down, we dive into the specifics. What kind of mechanical stresses will it face? What temperatures will it be exposed to? Are there any chemicals or solvents involved?
So we're basically building a profile of the environment that this material will live in. It's like a detective investigation gathering clues to help us solve the case of the perfect material.
I love that analogy. That's spot on. And you know what? I think it's time we bring in a little more detail about this polyamide family.
You're right. Things are about to get even more interesting. And we're back on the deep dive. Before the break, we were talking about how even a seemingly simple material choice can turn into a choose-your-own-adventure. It's not just about finding a strong material. It's about finding the right strong material. And understanding those subtle but crucial differences within the nylon family is key.
What's fascinating here is how those tiny differences in molecular structure really translate to real-world performance. Remember those amide bonds we talked about? The ones that create those super strong interlocking chains?
Right.
Well, the specific arrangement of those bonds is what differentiates one nylon grade from another.
Okay, so now we're going even deeper, down to the molecular level. This is where my brain starts to feel a little fuzzy. Can you break it down for me and for our listeners in a way that even someone who's not a chemist can grasp?
Sure. Imagine you're building with Legos.
Okay.
You can connect those bricks in tons of different ways to create all sorts of different shapes and structures.
Right.
Same with nylon. The way those molecules are arranged and linked together determines the material's overall properties.
So different Lego configurations lead to different nylon superpowers.
Exactly. For example, nylon 6 and nylon 6-6, which we mentioned earlier, have slightly different arrangements of those amide bonds. This subtle difference gives them distinct characteristics. Nylon 6 is known for its excellent wear resistance. It's often used in bearings and gears. It's like the workhorse of the nylon family. On the other hand, nylon 6 boasts an even higher melting point, making it a top choice for engine components and other high-temperature applications. You could say it thrives under pressure.
It's amazing to think that such tiny molecular tweaks can have such a significant impact on a material's performance. But with all these different nylon grades available, it must get pretty tricky to choose the right one for a particular project. It's like trying to pick the perfect flavor from an entire ice cream shop.
It definitely can be.
Yeah.
But that's where our framework comes into play. Remember those guiding questions we talked about?
Yeah.
It all starts with defining your application. Is it a moving part that will experience a lot of friction or a static component that needs to withstand high heat?
Right, so we need to know how the material will be used, what kind of environment it'll live in, and what challenges it'll face.
Exactly. And once we've got a handle on those factors, we can start looking at the specific properties of each nylon grade. For example, let's say you're designing a part that needs to handle extreme temperatures, like a component for a car engine. You might consider using PA46, a specific type of nylon known for its exceptional heat resistance. It can handle those scorching under-the-hood conditions without breaking a sweat.
PA46. That sounds familiar. Is that one of those special nylon grades we talked about earlier?
It is. It's a high-performance nylon that's specifically engineered to withstand those demanding high-temperature environments.
So when choosing between different nylon grades, it's all about finding the one whose superpowers best align with the needs of the project. It's like assembling a team of superheroes, each with their own unique abilities to tackle a specific challenge.
I love how you put that. It really is about understanding the strengths and weaknesses of each material, and then choosing the one that's best suited for the job.
Speaking of weaknesses, we talked about how polyamide can be vulnerable to certain chemicals and UV exposure. But you also mentioned that there are ways to mitigate those vulnerabilities, like using UV inhibitors for outdoor applications. Are there similar solutions for dealing with chemical sensitivities?
That's a great question, and the answer is, it depends. In some cases, you can modify the nylon itself to make it more resistant to specific chemicals. For example, some grades of nylon are inherently more resistant to oils and fuels. But in other situations, it might be necessary to go with a different material altogether.
So it's not always a simple fix. Sometimes you have to make a strategic decision to use a different material, even if it means going back to the drawing board.
Exactly. And that's why having a solid understanding of material science is so crucial. It allows you to make those informed decisions and choose the best material for the job, even if it means venturing outside of the nylon family.
It sounds like we're starting to see the light at the end of this polyamide nylon tunnel. We've covered a lot of ground, from the basics of molecular structure to the nuanced differences between nylon grades and strategies for overcoming material weaknesses. But before we wrap things up, I'm curious to get your perspective on a specific aspect of material selection that I think often gets overlooked. What about the environmental impact of these materials?
That's an incredibly important point, and one that I'm glad you brought up. The sustainability of materials is becoming increasingly critical in today's world. And both polyamide and nylon have their own set of considerations in this regard.
Okay, so we're adding another layer to our decision-making framework. It's not just about strength, durability, and performance anymore. We also need to factor in the environmental footprint of our material choices.
Absolutely. And that's a topic that deserves its own deep dive. Fortunately, we have time to explore this fascinating and essential aspect of polyamide and nylon.
We're back for the final part of our deep dive. And before we took a little break, we were talking about a topic that's getting more and more attention these days. Sustainability. It's not just about strength and durability anymore. We got to think about the planet too, right?
Absolutely. As designers and engineers, we have a responsibility to think about the entire life cycle of a product, from its creation to its eventual disposal. And that includes the environmental impact of the materials we choose.
So when it comes to polyamide and nylon, what are some of the key environmental considerations? What are the pros and cons?
Well, let's start with the challenges. The production of polyamide and nylon, it relies heavily on fossil fuels, which are a major contributor to climate change. And the manufacturing process can be pretty energy intensive, so definitely room for improvement on that front.
Yeah, that makes sense. Relying on fossil fuels and using a ton of energy during production, that doesn't sound very sustainable. But are there any positives to consider? Are there any efforts being made to make these materials more eco-friendly?
For sure. There's a lot of exciting research and development happening in the world of sustainable materials. For example, some companies are exploring ways to produce bio-based polyamides using renewable resources like plants instead of those fossil fuels.
Whoa. So instead of oil, we could be making polyamide from plants. That's incredible. What about recycling? Can polyamide and nylon be recycled effectively?
Yes, they can. And that's a big plus. Both polyamide and nylon are recyclable. They can be melted down and reprocessed into new products, reducing the need for virgin materials.
That's good news. But isn't recycling plastic a bit of a mixed bag? I've heard it's not always as effective as we'd like it to be.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. While these materials are recyclable, a lot of it still ends up in landfills. That's partly because of limitations in our current recycling infrastructure, and partly because of a lack of consumer awareness about proper disposal methods.
So there's work to be done on both ends. The production side, A&D, the recycling side, it sounds like the key is to move toward a more circular economy for these materials.
You got it. A circular economy focuses on minimizing waste and maximizing the reuse of resources. For polyamide and nylon, this would involve things like designing products for disassembly and recyclability, improving recycling systems, and educating people about how to properly dispose of these materials.
It's great to know that there are folks out there working on these solutions. Gives me hope for the future of these incredibly useful materials.
I'm right there with you. The more we know about these materials, both their strengths and their limitations, the better we can use them responsibly and make choices that are good for our projects and the planet.
So well said. I feel like we've come full circle in this deep dive. We started with the tiny world of molecular bonds, then zoomed out to the big picture of sustainability and the circular economy.
It's been quite a journey, and I think we've uncovered some really valuable insights along the way.
We definitely have. So, to our listeners who came along on this deep dive with us, we hope you've come away with a deeper understanding of polyamide and nylon. Not just as materials, but as part of a larger system, one that includes environmental and social impacts.
Remember, every material choice we make has ripple effects, and by staying informed and asking the right questions, we can make choices that contribute to a better world.
That's a perfect way to wrap things up. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the world of polyamide and nylon. We hope you learned something new, were inspired to think differently, and maybe even got some ideas for your next project. Until next time, keep diving deep.